Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and it's the return of Jake the Snake Roberts, and this time, Jake's giving us a detailed look at his time in AAA in Mexico. He's talking about the crazy fans and all the stuff they used to throw at him in the ring, from beer cans to piss-filled bottles to the food they were eating. He's telling stories about working with Conan and the sensational Sherry Martel, the riots that his TV promos used to start. You hear of his infamous hair versus hair match and the lengths he had to go to get his money out of the country. It's crazy. He talks about the 1 6-man match he had with Eddie Guerrero, and he's telling even more stories about the Snakes, living with them and traveling with them. Jake was also in the last season of The Dark Side of the Ring, talking about The Ultimate Warrior, how that happened, and the vignettes with the Snakes that they shot together. Jake's even got a few tales about Hulk Hogan and how his job became setting up the heel for Hogan. So many great stories from a great storyteller, Jake the Snake Roberts, coming up. And also coming up, a lot of great music from Fozzy. Our new album, Boombox, comes out May 6th. Pre-order it wherever you buy and stream music. I Still Burn, over 500,000 views on YouTube in 2 weeks. And the song is now our 7th consecutive top 25 hit. Right here. That's good, good stuff there. So check it out and come check out Fozzy on the Save the World Tour. We had an amazing time on the first leg. Judas went gold, 500,000 units sold. And we played some amazing shows and made a bunch of you guys and gals who came out to rock with us at the Fozzy VIP meet and greet. So much fun. FozzyRock.com for all ticket and VIP information. And tomorrow, Thursday, April 28th, we will be at the Southport Music Hall in New Orleans. Friday, April 29th, Houston, Texas at Warehouse Live. April 30th, Saturday, San Antonio, Texas at the Rock Box. That's with John 5. Also, Houston has John 5 on the bill as well. Sunday, Austin, Texas, come and take it live. And Monday, May 2nd, Dallas, Texas, Amplified Live. And, of course, the Whiskey A Go-Go on next Thursday, May 5th, on the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We hit 3 more shows in California, Nevada, 2 shows in Colorado, Kansas, Arkansas, Illinois. Tickets are available. Meet and greets are available. FozzyRock.com. Don't you dare miss it. And come hang out with us. The Fozzy Rock meet and greet. We'll play a mini concert for you. We meet you, we greet you, we do a Q&A. Don't forget about ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Ranger at Sea, the Four Leaf Clover. That's February 2nd, 2023. Lots of stuff going on, but most importantly, right here, right now, let's get to Jake the Snake Roberts and his time working as the Rudo Grande in AAA in Mexico, right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. I was talking with Jake Roberts a few weeks ago. We said we should do more of these, do more Talk as Jerichos with all the experiences that you've had and all the great, you're such a great storyteller. And one of the things that we talked about that is kind of a forgotten part of your career that was hugely successful was your time in Mexico and AAA.
Yeah, Mexico, man. That was scary down there, bro.
In what way?
The fans. They're very dangerous, very dangerous.
Well, you also had tremendous heat there.
Yeah, I did.
No surprise.
And I got more once I got there. But, yeah, I got a phone call, man, from those guys. And a kid named Conan.
Right.
Which is a big rib on the Mexican people because he's a Cuban.
Yeah.
Posing as a Mexican.
Right.
I mean, who does that? The first. But, yeah, he's a good guy, I guess. And, wow, I wanted to do this thing down there, and which would ultimately lead to a hair match.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't really tickle me, but we made it where it was ticklish with the money, you know, and we got the money right, and I was all for it, man. Let's go do this shit. And so they wanted me to come down to Mexico City to a big show they were having, because he was doing a mask versus career match. I can't remember the other guy's name now. Doggone it.
The guy was Cian Karas.
Cian Karas.
Loser right, must retire match.
Right, yeah. Right. So that was the whole deal. And I wasn't alone, though. They had hired the services of Sensational Sherry to be my bodyguard, more or less. She's supposed to have been a valet, but she's not a valet. Mm-hmm. You know, I met that girl when she was too young. We had quite a life together over the years. We'll tell that someday.
Well, she's one of the all-time greats, not just as a valet, wrestler, as an overall personality in the business, right?
Yeah, man. She was unbelievable. You know, I'll tell you just a little bit of it. I met her in Lafayette, Louisiana. I'd been refereeing about 2 weeks, and I could not believe this beautiful girl was looking at me, you know, and the other wrestlers and stuff. But she was, and I had to tear down the ring back then, put the ring in the U-Haul truck, and she's still there. I'm like, do you need a ride or something? She goes, no, I'm waiting on you. I'm like, are you kidding me? And then we'll tell the rest of the story some other day.
But,
she was in Mexico. And there was a very large black gentleman that was part of our group. I didn't know who he was. Come to find out, he was the road manager for Salt and Pepper, who were real hot at the time.
Right. Because this is about 93, 94 or so, right? Yeah, 93,
Yeah. So they had this Jewish lawyer with them who were investing money to run shows in the States, you know, with AAA. And his wife, now his wife was a strange chick. She was in a Harvard think tank, you know. She may have been the smartest chick on the planet, but she had no common sense.
Right.
You know, she'd walk into doors. Oh, she's just, they're supposed to open for her magically, but they were there at ringside with me. I'm like, you know, you guys ought to leave, you know, because it's not going to be much fun here in a few minutes. Because at the appropriate time, I jumped over the railing, and Cian Karas came out, because as I'm going for Conan, he comes out and swings me around. Well, the idea was for me to blast him, and he's going to go down. Then I'm going to turn around and work on Conan, and then that'll be it. Karas will win. He'll grow back in the ring. Well, I hit Cian Karas, and he hulks up on me, which pissed me off. So I hit him hard enough that blood shot out of his nostrils, and he went down. Didn't move much either, but I went to work on Conan. I had to go pick Cian Karas up. He's still half out of it, and I throwed him in the ring, and that was the end of the match. And then, of course, the shit started. Mexicans have great arms. You know, they can throw some stuff a long ways, and they're very accurate. They were blasting us, man, and the barricades were pretty shoddy. Security was non-existent, more or less. So there are only 50,000 Mexicans in there, but I was okay because I had Sherry. You know, and the only thing that pissed me off about Sherry was she got in front of me and she's getting all the good shots in on these guys. And I finally stopped her about a halfway back. Sherry, let me have one. No. You know, she loved hitting guys, man. And we lost the lawyer and the big black gentleman and the wife. We finally got to the dressing room, man. We were a mess. They had thrown piss on us. They had thrown nacho sauce on us. They had, you know, pecani sauce on us. And that shit burns in your eyes, by the way. Put it in your mouth, not in your eyes. But we got back to the locker room, man, and they were pelting the locker room building with everything you think of, bricks and chairs and stuff. I'm like, this is getting pretty weird, man. You know, and everybody in there, they're like, natural day, you know?
Right.
Well, that was like 11 o'clock. At 4 a.m., they're still not dispersing.
Wow.
Yeah. And the only Mexican that's left in the locker room is an old gentleman by the name of Pedro Aguayo.
Pedro Aguayo.
Yeah, an old-timer. and didn't speak a word of English, but we understood tequila. And we sat there and drank tequila at 4 a.m., at which time the office made some phone calls and got all the baby faces down there and set up an impromptu autograph session at 5 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah, on the other side of the building. Everything's free.
Right.
To pull the people away. So we were able to get out of there.
Because well, Conan at the time, too, was like huge, huge. So because of you, he has to retire.
Right.
And people are not happy about it.
No, they want to kill my ass, man. And I flew back home, and then we got to go to, just the other side of the border in San Diego.
Tijuana.
And they're going to do a show there. So they send me to a TV station to do some promos. I did the promos. And, you know, back in those days, you could still have a little fun on the mic without doing something politically incorrect. Because I'm not a racist at all, man. I love all people. I don't care what color you are. I don't see color. I guess I'm colorblind because I just don't dig that shit, man. I got more in my life than that.
Right.
You know, I can't stand people that are that way.
But you were saying that you went and did this press.
Yeah, I went and did the press thing, man. And, you know, I was having fun. I asked the announcer, do you know the reason they're having the Olympics in Atlanta and not Mexico? No, why? Because anybody can run, jump, or swim is already there. You know,
right.
They didn't like that.
Right.
Then I sang a song called the Frito Bandito. I am the Frito Bandito. Bandito.
Yeah.
I love Fritos corn chips. I like them, I do. I love Fritos corn chips. I steal them from you. And they thought that was bad, too. So they stopped that song. But they did not enjoy that one. And there may have been a couple other little digs. I didn't think it was real serious. They took me back to my hotel. It was live. As I'm walking through the hotel lobby, there's a bar there. In those days, I stopped. And I look up, and there's a television. Well, it's in Spanish, but something caught my eye. And what caught my eye was these Mexicans being sprayed with a water cannon. I'm like, wow, this is serious, brother. So I tell the bartender, damn, man, they're going to kill those people. He says, yeah, amigo, you do this. I'm like, I did this. I didn't do shit. Yeah, they're looking for you, mother. And what?
Mm.
They tried to find you. They want to cut your throat.
Ooh.
I'm like, can I buy a beer? You know, and you a shot? Easy. And, the people were trying to get into the TV station.
Wow.
Yeah, they broke out windows and everything, man. It was really bad, man. They got a lot of heat over that. A lot of heat. But then we go to...
But just to interject, you're no stranger to getting heat. But this is... This is different.
I don't do well with numbers.
Yeah. This is different from normal heat.
Yeah, it is, man, because this isn't one or two guys or even 10 guys. This is thousands.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid to walk the streets because I just did not know, you know. And, you know, when they're coming from every direction, man, you don't have a chance.
Right.
You know, it's not any fun when it's one-on-one. Right. I don't want that shit, man. And I understand that I push the buttons. That's my job. And I love it. But your mouth can get you in trouble, as you well know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So you did the match in Mexico, then Conan has to retire, but the rule is, quote unquote, that he can still work in the States.
Right.
So
then
you guys go to Los Angeles to do
LA,
continue there. And
we do a tag match there, bro. And it was hilarious, man. Because, you know, in Mexico, you have the minis.
Right.
That accompanied the baby faces to the ring.
Yeah.
So there's a mini Conan, you know, about 3 foot tall. Well, that was the first time I've ever hoisted somebody over my head and tossed him back in the ring to Conan. And, man, I felt so good about that. But the most fun about that night was, I'm just giving you the fun part. The matches were that good, actually. six-man match and three guys don't speak English, it's not much fun. Mm. You know, it's like pulling teeth. Plus, they had told me, Jake, you don't go down. Mm. You just swat them out of the air.
Right.
Because they're smaller, much smaller. I'm like, what? Swat them out of the air? Guy drop kicks you, don't go down. You just push their feet and you do it, don't take a bump. Wow, this is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't like that. It just didn't feel right. Because it just, I don't know. But
you being the powerhouse.
Yeah, the strong guy. Yeah, you know, give me a break. I want a bump. Yeah. I enjoy that part of the match, you know. But we did the match. I did the press slam with the mini. And had an opportunity to work a little bit with Aguayo, which was a real, he was so easy, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, punch, punch, kick, kick. Oh, here you go, bro. We got that.
Such legendary status,
yeah.
Though. He's super
Yeah,
over,
man.
Yeah.
When you come in the ring, the people went nuts. Mm. Went nuts. And I'm like, are you serious? Mm. He's got furry boots. That's all he's got. You know? But I had an attendant with the ring with me by the name of Diamond Dallas Page.
Ah, okay.
And Dallas was just starting. I've been working out with him and stuff. And I got him a job down there. They wanted him to go to the ring with me. So I convinced him, some brother, and you know Dallas, he wants to look right. He wants to be dressed to the nines, man. He's going to impress some people.
Right.
And Dallas brings his fox fur with him. He's going to wear that to the ring. I'm like, are you sure? He goes, yeah, brother, don't you think it looks good? I said, it looks great, man. And he goes and asks the management, oh, amigo, that's very nice. So he went to the ring. I don't know about that. He didn't understand. He wore it to the ring, which it was the last time he ever wore that. Because they hit it with the picante sauce and the cheese sauce and everything, the beer and the piss and everything. We did the thing in L.A., and we had a real hard time, Dallas and I, in the...
Sorry. So you guys are going to the ring?
Yeah, well, we're coming out of the ring, man, and they are unloading on us, and there's no protection. They absolutely walked away from us because we were taking some heavy shit. Batteries hurt. Mm. You know,
big ones, D batteries.
Yeah, man, they were pelting us with some horrible shit. And you know, it's not fun tasting piss or beer, you know, hot beer. Cold one's okay, but hot, no. Mm. And they were getting very close to us. Some of them were getting in some shots. Basically, we fought our way back. Well, I had asked for security before we went out there, and because there was none, I went straight for the head guy, man, in the locker room. I was pissed, man. And in those days, I wasn't very good at controlling myself because I was amped up on pharmaceuticals and things. And I grabbed him and slung him around a little bit and halfway destroyed the locker room. Then I grabbed Dallas and said, what are you doing? He goes, I'm getting this shit off of me. I said, fuck you, man. We're going back to the ring. Mm. What? Are you serious, man? We had to fight our way back. I said, yeah, but they're running out of shit now, man. They ain't got no ammo. So we went back out to the ring and beat the baby faces up again, which was really fun, and made our way back, and it was a lot of fun. But
well, just to get some perspective, a couple people that I asked about this that were there said it was by far the hottest live crowd that they've ever seen. That was for the three-way of Conan versus Uber St. Karras. You guys had 17,000 people at the sports arena, 8,000 turned away. Way more than 1991 WrestleMania in the same building.
Yep.
Largest U.S. crowd of the year, more than SummerSlam or WrestleMania or anything. And this is at kind of a quote-unquote independent show.
Yeah, independent. And this is without cell phones and the internet.
Right.
In those days, man. I mean, that's what was so amazing about WrestleMania 3. There was no computer, you know, shipping shit
just
across.
Just complete word of mouth,
it's
right?
It's just word of mouth and television.
And that's how you guys drew this crowd for there?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it was a blast, man. We even took that show to New York and did it. Then I went down and did the hair match, of course. And Dallas wasn't available, so they gave me the Warlord.
It's the most random, yeah, right?
Well, why won't he wrestle for me, you know? And that wasn't much fun, getting my hair all chopped
Was the hair
off.
Match also in the United States?
No, it was done in Mexico.
In Mexico, gotcha. Yeah,
it was done in Mexico. You know, they did some claws and bullshit, yada, yada.
No, obviously that's a big match in Mexico, the hair versus hair, and you're getting paid, you know, a good chunk of change for that.
$50,000 for my hair, man.
that's not a bad
not day's a bad work. Day's work, man.
Right.
But the thing is, you're worried about getting the money out of the country or out of the locker room, for that matter.
Wow, good point.
I know I brought somebody down there specifically for that, because I'd heard some stories and guys getting ambushed and whatever. And plus, I'd been at a hotel there in Mexico City, a 5-star hotel, an art bar, a couple of weeks before, who had been working out there full time, came out of the bank, which was across the street from the hotel. And as he came across the street, a guy rode up on a motorcycle with a guy behind him with an Uzi and demanded his fanny pack, and which all the money was in it. And he went to the hotel and called the police. And the police came to the hotel, and they studied the tapes, because there were tapes at the bank and tapes from the hotel. And the police said, we think we can find these friends, but it may take a little money to get us motivated.
Of course.
So they wanted like $2,000 to go find his $2,500. They asked him, how much did you lose? $2,500.
They want $2,000 for it.
It's going to have to cost you maybe $2,000 to get us, you know, we have to pay for our time, you know.
Right.
So he didn't do it. But I didn't want to take that chance with 50, you know. And I took a guy down there. I thought about this earlier, and I cannot remember this cat's name, man. But anyway, I told this dude, I'm going to give you this money, and you're going to stay in the locker room. Got it? Yeah, man, I understand that. I come back to the locker room. He's not there. I freaked out. Where was he? In the back of the building getting a blowjob. I punched him right in his face, man. You know, ran the chick off. Said, you dumb bastard, man. You're lucky you're not dead.
Right.
You know, because that's what happens. They get a chick on her knees in front of you, and they woke up behind you, bada-bing. Very interesting. You know, and I made some other interesting trips down there. I ran into the police. It's not the police, it's the army. You know,
right.
On the highways, they use the army.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pull you over. And we were in a bus with 40 wrestlers, and they're going to search us to see if we have any contraband.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know. You know, we're all back in the back smoking, you know. And they all come on the bus, and they're just looking at us, and, you know, we're like, fan in the air. I'm shitting my pants. These other Mexicans are looking at me like, it's okay, amigo. It's not fucking okay. Right. I got shit. Amigo, we all got shit, man. But my shit's illegal. You know? And the whole deal was, they held us there for about 45 minutes, and finally the promoter comes out and hands some money to the head guy, and they walk off and leave. That's the way they do business.
That's the thing. They're just looking to get paid off.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. For instance, I asked one of my friends, Eddie, if he knew anybody that had something that I wanted. Coke. Yeah, man. I said, well, can I hook up? He goes, well, just go to your room. I'll send him over. Oh, man, that's great. You sure? Oh, man, don't worry. I promise. Okay, man. Okay, take it easy. I go to the room. I got a hooker with me. Knock on the door. I look through the peephole, and it's a cop. I won't open the door. And I hear again. I'm like, I won't look through the peephole because I know they can see me. You know.
Yeah.
So I'm just listening to hear him walk away, and finally I hear, "Amigo, amigo, I have your package." What? Yeah, amigo, it's okay. It's okay. No problem. And let me give you your package. Guerrero sent me. And I open the door, and he tries to come in. I'm like, hell no, you know. I just snatched the shit out of his hand. Of course, I shut the door. I'm like, oh my God. This is a setup. I run to the toilet and I flush it.
Oh.
You know, ruined my night. Scared to death. So I couldn't even do the chick because I was so terrified. Yeah. I was going to fix to be shot or killed or raped or whatever, or go to prison. It was horrifying, man.
Well, when you're, because I worked there for years too, lived there, and you realize it really is a third world country.
Oh,
and
there
it's
man.
The Wild West.
It is, man.
You know, it really is.
Yeah, that's why I tell people, we are so fortunate to be living in America, man. Yeah, we got some problems, man, and hopefully we'll keep working on them. There'll always be problems. Mm-hmm. Always. You know, it doesn't matter if you're black or you're Chinese or Japanese or Asian, whatever. There's always going to be a problem. But we've got to keep working for it, man. Work forward. And I think one of the biggest things that pisses me off these days is bullies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're bottom feeders, man. They want to hurt people.
When you were talking about your hair versus hair, mm-hmm. you did a really cool thing because I was in Smoky Mountain Wrestling at the time, and you came to work a big match with Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony.
And his wife.
His wife, Dirty White Girl.
Yeah.
So kind of talk about that promo where you kind of revealed that you had shaved your head. It was awesome.
I can't remember what I said.
Well, it was something along the lines of, I guess you had shaved your head already, so why not use this to the advantage? Like, I'm so crazy, you never know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I might even show up with a shaved head, and you took your hat off, and I was like, what?
Yeah, I freaked everybody out, including my wife and kids. You don't look right. Yeah, no shit. I hated that, man. I hated it the most when I went and played golf. Because I burnt my skull out there on that golf course. I've never had anything as painful as a burnt skull.
Right.
When the shower hit it, I cried. The pain.
Now, do you remember, like, how was the ceremony where you got it cut? Like, what did they do?
It was a fight. You know, they had to finally hold me down to clip it, you know. And the bastards, they didn't use good clippers either, man. The hair's wet. Man, they more or less just ripped it out, basically, you know. I finally reached up there and was cutting it myself, you know, which pissed them off because I said, you're killing the gimmick, you know. Yeah, I don't want to f***ing get hurt, man.
You're killing me.
Yeah.
Right,
you got a pair of scissors in your hand.
It's interesting, though, how you're doing that in the middle of the ring in front of everybody. And that's the people cheering
that's
going nuts.
That's a big nut for them, man. It's humiliation.
Right, right.
You know, that's the same thing for them when they go mask versus mask. That's a big thing in Mexico. You know that as well. They fight their career. They fight their whole career for that one night where they get the big payoff, which is the mask. And it's insane. It's insane. How smart is that, though, to wear a mask? That way you can have a normal life.
Right.
You know, if you want it.
But that's the thing, too. It's only the one big loss for the mask. But the hair versus hair, those guys who have lost their hair a dozen times, they grow it as long as they can, lose it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I told them, I said, hey, I'll come back next year with more, you know.
It grows back.
Let's go for pubes next, you know, whatever, you know. I'll cough up some.
Let's talk a little bit about you had a 1-6-man match with Love Machine and Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, buddy. And I remember that night, too. I can't remember who we were wrestling because of what I did in the locker room afterwards.
It's Conan, Pero, and Blue Panther is what it says here. And that's the sports
match. The match was all right. Because, of course, for me, it was so easy because I'm supposed to swat them out of the air.
Yeah.
No sell.
Yeah.
You know? So Eddie and those guys are busting their asses. I go in, I kill, I tag them, they have to fly. So after the match, which everybody loved, I got to the back and I threw a temper tantrum. And the big guy comes, he goes, Jake, what is the problem? I said, man, if you can't find some guys that can take better bumps than these two assholes, that's, my God, tell them to get some hype. You know? And they're like, you, because they're damn near dead, man.
Right.
Eddie was such a sweetheart, man. We really lost a piece of gold when he left. Art Barr, for the, you know, at the time, Art was such a great guy. And those two guys worked their asses off down there. Well, you know.
Yeah.
It's 100 miles an hour.
But they had magic as a team, though.
Yes, they did.
With charisma.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They drew a lot of money down there.
I can see that, too, because Art had such great charisma. Right. And at the time, Eddie didn't have as much, but he was the worker.
He was going.
And then pairing up with you with this heat machine.
Yeah,
that must have been a great night.
It was fun, man. Blue Panther was fun. Oh, man. Mexico. I love doing this because I get to relive some of it. And it's a great feeling, man. And you're going to find out one of these days. Hopefully it's not soon. And that once you step out of there, brother, you miss, there's a big hole in your heart.
Right.
And I'm so fortunate that I worked hard to get sober, real hard. And it took several years to do it, but I've been clean now for 11 years. And AEW has been so kind to me, so good to me. And it's like I get to live again, man. You know, and hopefully I'll be here for a little while. Yeah, originally, I came in here for 10 days, for 10 shots.
Wow.
That was the deal. And then they asked me to stay for a year, which I was surprised. And because I don't know about you, man, but I don't value myself high. It's not that I'm humble. It's just that I doubt myself. You know, and I think my father put that in my head. Because no matter what I did, it wasn't good enough. And I'm that way about myself, but looking back, I realized I had a hell of a career, man.
But what you don't understand, though, is you do have a lot of presence. Like, just having you around. Yeah. Like, I remember last year during the pandemic when we first just had people, our like the boys in the crowd.
Yeah.
And one match that we had, you were out there watching it. It's still deep down. It's like, holy shit, Jake the Snake's watching. This is
hell
cool.
Hell yeah, man.
You know, but that you do have that you know, that aura. Legend, that aura.
Yeah.
People appreciate that.
They do, man. And I don't get it, but I'm grateful.
Yeah.
I am so happy to be here and to be a part of this. I think this is the new way, the new world.
Mm-hmm.
And so good to be a part of something that's kicking somebody's ass that we don't like. Not you, Hunter.
Do you think one of the reasons why you had such a career after your career is because of that late 80s WWE boom? Like, if you were over then...
Yeah.
You're still over now, whether you're a Honky Tonk Man or Brutus Beefcake, and obviously you were a top main event guy. But it was such a magical time for the business and the guys
magic,
at that point.
And I give credit to the Snake. Ah. Everybody can identify with that Snake.
Right.
You know, when you're taught at birth, keep away from snakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're bad. They're going to hurt you.
Right.
They're sneaky. Mom pisses her pants. Dad runs.
Yeah.
That's why the kids dug it whenever I was in the WWE. Vince didn't understand it. I said, Vince, don't you get it? The kids dig it because they watch mom and dad cringe.
Mm-hmm.
They dig watch mom and dad cringe. Because now they want a snake so they can take their snake and chase mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole deal, man. And the whole thing is, I'm terrified of snakes too. I hate them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And here I spent the better part of my career with one in my damn locker or bedroom or in the hotel bathroom. Try to go in there and piss at 3 o'clock in the morning, brother. Pull your junk out in front of a snake. It's not easy. Man, and pity you if you have to take a dump.
Right.
You can't trust a snake, you know.
So it must be hard, too. Like when you show up in Mexico, for example, and here's your snake for the evening. Snakes are different personalities and temperament, right?
Brother, you get different ones all the time. And hell, down there, they weren't going to a pet shop and getting these. Like, it matters, because it don't matter. You cannot train a snake, folks. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
When they're hungry, they eat. When they're pissed off, they bite. Mm-hmm. That's all they got. That shitting on you, which is the nastiest, foulest smelling stuff ever, and it does not wash off. It's worse than a skunk. But you never know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in the WWE, I had to carry it from town to town myself. God damn, man. You know how much luggage you have to carry up there? Well, add 80 pounds of snake. It was brutal, man. Waking up at 5 o'clock in the hotel room, you got to pick the snake out of the bathroom, put it in the bag, put it in a box.
And that's your responsibility to carry this to the airport.
Yeah, smart guy, Jake. Why weren't you a cockroach? You get a bug anywhere.
That's right.
But, you know, and plus the guy that I was getting snakes from, he was an old-time wrestling fan, man, and he thought Bruno was, you know, legit.
Mm.
So when he first started bringing me snakes, he was bringing me some vile, mean son-of-a-bitches. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, this was going to get Steamboat good. Dude, I have to carry that son-of-a-bitch, okay? Oh, man, just be careful. Like, oh, come on, man, you know? And I had to get a fresh one every 10 days.
So why's that?
Because they couldn't handle the flying.
Oh.
Their lungs run the length of their body. They're very small. So if they get infected, brother, they're pretty much done.
Gotcha.
So we had to switch them out all the time. And, you know, I never knew if he was going to bring me a poodle or a Doberman, you know, or a Rottweiler. What the hell is this, man? And you learn pretty quick. Put them in the floor, look at them. That's a snake. Watch him, you know? And I was really thrilled when we went to the Cobra. Because the cobra don't have fangs. You know, that's the bad thing about the pythons. They have these long fangs, and the whole thing about a python is they bite you, and then they throw their body around you and squeeze.
Oh, wow.
Now, if you take a snake, its skin, when it wraps, the scales lock. You cannot break
them. Oh, wow.
You cannot break a snake.
Oh.
You have to unravel it.
Mm.
If you don't know that, you're in trouble, which happened in Indianapolis with Steamboat. He had the that monster monitor lizard, and I had the snake, and you know, I've got it wrapped around me and we're punching each other and he's got the lizard and, you know, it makes for great pictures and stuff. It's really stupid.
It's a dragon, the Komodo dragon,
yeah, Komodo
right?
dragon, yeah. And the thing is, I'm not paying attention and he gets around my neck and all of a sudden, I see Carlite's coming, you know. I'm like, whoa, that's, what the hell? And I'm out. Because they don't choke you out. They put pressure on these arteries here to your brain. Mm. And you pass out. Lack of oxygen to your brain. Mm. And when you pass out, brother, you're down. Well, that's when the snake's going to finish you. You know? If it had not been for Steamboat, I wouldn't be here today.
What did he do?
He unraveled it.
He knew enough to unravel.
He grabbed the tail and ran. You know, and got him off of me. And then I came back too pretty quickly, just in time to save my job, because Vince said, if it ever gets into the crowd, don't even call me.
Oh, wow.
Because there's going to be court suit after court suit. I'll be done.
Mass panic,
yes,
right?
Do not let it get to the crowd. I came to just as about 3 feet of the snake was into the crowd, but the tail was still in the ring.
Right.
And I reached over and grabbed the tail and jerked and pulled him back in. But the people were already starting to crush. You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a rush, man. And here's something even funnier. We came back to Indy maybe 6-8 weeks later. I get there, and this guy in a suit running to me. I'm like, whoa, stop right there. What's up? He says, I'm the building manager. Yeah, he goes, we've been taking calls for the last 2 weeks. Do you have the same snake with you this time? I'm like, why? He goes, because they want to see it. They want to see it kill you. Mm-hmm. I love my fans. No, it's not the same, you bastard.
So that's one of the dangers of having these things.
Oh,
that
yeah,
can just coil
be
around
careful
you.
What you think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See what marijuana does. That's how I came up with that whole idea of smoking pot and drinking beer, driving down the highway, man. How many times have you thought of brilliant ideas while you're in your car or your plane?
Right.
Alone. Mm-hmm. And the brain starts to work. Basically, you're just trying to keep yourself awake. Mm. And you got to think of something interesting enough to keep you going. And that's how it happened.
You were really great this season on Dark Side of the Ring. There was a couple shows that were based around you. One was about the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
And that story still blows my mind because yeah. It was only 30 years ago, but it might as well be 100 years ago the way the business has changed
yeah.
so much.
Yeah, it's changed so much.
You know, can you kind of go through that story again, the famous...
Well, you know, I was in, we were in Orlando, and I had tried to work with Hogan, and after two matches, they stopped that because the people were cheering for me.
Oh, really? Is that why? Yeah.
Yeah, they were chanting DDT, DDT.
Ah.
And Vince said, that's that.
Well, Vince was very protective of Hulk at the time, too, right?
Well, he had to be.
Mm-hmm.
He had invested millions and millions in marketing for him. There wasn't shit out there for Jake.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a t-shirt.
Right.
But that's the boat. That's the goose there. The golden goose is right there. Protect it, mm-hmm. because that was the business. You know, he was the chosen one, and everything goes to him. At the time, they would take a heel that had been establishing a career for 20 years.
Right.
And Hogan got to work with him one time around. That was it, brother. You were done.
That's it, one time around.
One time around.
Mm.
And Savage was the only one that got more offerings. But, it was pretty weird, man, because I was in Orlando, and Jack Lanza came to him, and he goes, Jake, Vince wants to talk to you. I'm like, I didn't flunk no test, man. I did not flunk no test. No, Jake, it's okay. You know? Lanza, unfortunately, had to give me the bad news one time. I studied all night for that test, still flunked it.
The cigarette in his hand. Yeah.
Exactly.
Blowing smoke in your face.
Right.
Yeah,
you know him. Jerk. But, yeah, Vince, what did I do? Nothing, Jake. Would you like to work with a warrior? Yeah. I'm finally going to get a shot at the money. Because that was the whole deal up there. If you weren't working with a champ or the Intercontinental champ at the time, you didn't make the money. Mm-hmm. You made money, but not the real money.
The main event is where the money is in WWE, yeah. and still is yeah. to this day.
But even back then, if you were in the main event in a sold-out show, if you weren't working with one of those two guys, you did not make the top money.
Really?
No. Those two guys got extra.
Mm.
And you got extra if you were working with
bigger
them.
Piece of the pie then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. which really used to piss me off because my job wound up being, well, I'll get to that. Okay. So I said, yeah, I'd like to work with Warrior. And he said, well, go talk to him and see if he'll work with you. Excuse me?
What?
He said, yeah, go ask his permission to do something and y'all work with each other. I got to ask this motherfucker. And that was it, man. I had to go in there and ask him to wrestle me, please.
How do you approach that?
I didn't do it well. I felt very bad about that. I was very angry about that. To me, he might as well throw piss in my face. You know, it worked my life, and I always took care of my opponent. Always made them. You know, I just believe in that. You got to make them before you can make yourself. So I went and knocked on the door, and, yeah, come here, you know, yells, you know. I walk in, he goes, yeah. I said, Vince, he goes, yeah, I talked to Vince. I'd like to work with you, man, if we can do something. Please. He's walking, pacing. I'm like, what is going on here? Let me tell you this, Cat. I don't care about you. I don't care about your family. I don't care about anything. Don't fuck up. You be on time. Don't miss a show. Blah, blah, blah. Don't fuck a fucking test. I'm like, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I am very,
Yeah. Sarcastically.
Yes. And I walked out of that room, and I was so humiliated, man, that I had to do that. Again, you might as well throw piss in my face. I mean, I used to have to sit when we were writing television, when Sean and Brett were throwing their pissy fights against each other, and we would be trying to write television, and Vince would get on the phone for 3 hours with those two cats, trying to get them to wrestle each other. I said, Vince, what are you doing? Fire the mother, man.
You're the boss.
Tell him to hit the fucking road. Mm-hmm. You know, when he brought me back in 96, he told me, he says, Jake, look around and see what you think the problem is. I said, it's real simple, man. The inmates are running the asylum. You know, the clique. Mm-hmm. The clique nearly killed their business. You know, everybody says how great they were. Well, let me tell you something. They drove it to the ground, man. So, whatever.
So you get the permission to work with
the Yeah, I get the permission. And, you know, which was really humiliating. And now I'm going to take a month off while we do these vignettes where we put snakes in a room and he has to go into the room. He's looking for the secret of the Undertaker. And, of course, we tell him, okay, we put 200 live snakes in that room. My guy did. And we told him, dude, here's how we get through this. When you go into the room, do not step. Slide your feet through them. Makes sense. Don't hurt the snake. He won't hurt you.
Right.
What did Warrior do? Plotted right in there. They're striking his boots one after another, man. And the funny thing about that day was they put 200 snakes in but only got 168 out. What happened to those other 32?
Right.
What happened to them was some of them ate each other. And some of them got loose. Not my house.
The air ducts or whatever, right?
Oh, everywhere, man. Yeah. You know, I had some really funny stuff happen with that snake. And in Australia, Thunder Juice and Tiger Liger was there.
Yeah.
He's terrified of snakes. He wouldn't even dress in the same locker room. So they gave him a locker room across from the other locker room, like the old arenas. And I go to get the snake for my match, and there's no snake in the bathroom. He's not in the shower. Where did he go? I don't know. So I have no snake. I go do my match. I come back. Liger's on last. He's in his own locker room. He goes and showers. When he come out of the shower, as he's walking by the toilet, the snake comes out of the toilet with his head and looks right at him. He streaked the arena. Naked. Left all of his shit there.
Uh-huh.
He was crying. He was shaking like a leaf.
Right.
He came in. They put him in a car. He went straight to the f***ing airport and went home. End of tour.
So it got into the shower drain, which connected to the toilet or something?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's amazing.
He got into the toilet system and just took off. You know? And I see Liger later in Japan, and he just looked at me, no! And I said, damn, dude, lighten up, man.
So you do the vignettes with the warrior and the snakes?
We do the thing with, we go to the cemetery, we do some stuff there.
Are you like aligned with the Undertaker in the sort of thing? Like your Undertaker's partner or whatever?
I'm with Undertaker and stuff, and we bury him and all this crazy shit we do. And we go to SummerSlam, and now shit's on. Jake versus the Warrior after SummerSlam. SummerSlam, Warrior demands $1 million from Vince before he'll go to the ring. Mm. He's the main event.
Wow.
In Madison Square Garden.
So he's basically blackmailing Vince. Give me $1 million or I'm
He's holding him up.
Wow.
He might as well have a gun in his hand.
Right.
You know? Well, Vince is in the position of, I don't have a choice here. He goes and gets the money. Armed guards bring it to the Warrior's locker room. Warrior had four armed guards waiting outside. They came in, got him and his wife, and took the money and left. Warrior goes to the ring. Now, I don't know this shit. I see these weird people walking around, but I don't know what's going on. There's a buzz, but I don't know what it is. But I didn't care. It's not my business.
Right.
Warrior goes to the ring. I'm standing right there by Vince. He comes out of the ring as he's walking. He gets close. Vince goes, "You are fired. Get the fuck out of my building."
Wow.
He looks at me. He goes, "You got the worst goddamn luck, don't you, kid?" I'm like, I just took 6 weeks off, man. What the fuck? So what do? They give me Sid.
That's unbelievable just to think about that for a second. So first of all, just the fact that Vince can get $1 million cash in like 2 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Warrior takes the money or leaves. He goes, comes back, fired instantly. That's unbelievable. Like just the whole concept of that. Of course, then you get left holding the bag.
I get left. I'm screwed. I couldn't do that because, number one, it's wrong. Mm-hmm. Number two, now I've seen Warrior do the same thing in Austria. Mm-hmm. But in Austria, he knew that if he did not go to the ring, that promoter was going to jail. Because they have a law over there. If you don't provide what you've advertised, that's a felony offense. Mm. They brought him his money over there, too. Wasn't $1 million.
Same, right.
Like $100,000 or something, you know.
Do you think that, like, because you're talking about, the legends that were never world champions, and obviously you're at the top of the list. Was that because you could never be a bigger babyface than Hogan? You could be second.
That's it.
And as a result, you couldn't work with Hogan because you were you're kind of caught in the middle.
Yeah, my job became, not a bad job, but not a great job, became setting the heel up for Hogan. Hmm. He would be in L.A. I would be wherever, Atlanta, Chicago, and I would be getting beat by the guy that's going to wrestle Hogan in Chicago the next time. So I'd get the guy over, prep him for Hogan. Meantime, I'm not even in Chicago to enjoy that payoff. I'm now in L.A. getting the next guy ready for Hogan. That was my job.
And there's nothing that you could do?
Nothing.
To heal?
Absolutely.
To heal Hogan, right?
Nope.
Because it's interesting, because when I first came into WWE, I always called myself the George Harrison of the Attitude Era. In that I was a super over babyface, but I was in the company with Rock and Austin. Yeah. I'd always be
what
number
are you
three.
Do?
So what I obviously turned heel. And then I worked with both of them, which was fine.
Yeah.
But you couldn't turn heel because they would start cheering you over Hogan.
They believed in the DDT.
Yeah.
And they loved the snake.
Yeah. I remember that, just how cool the concept of DDT was.
It's
the first wrestling move I can ever remember chanting, oh, DDT, or every kid wants to give each other the DDT, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, back when I first got that whole going, I'm not going to say the guys' names. I'll just say this. There were two brothers that were a big part of this business, and I was about to go to Atlanta to become the booker. And they were helping get me there. And they told me, says, Jake, if you want to be the biggest thing ever, go on WTBS and DDT somebody on the concrete. I said, but kill them. Make it somebody you don't like. But you will be, you'll never lack of a place to work. You'll be filthy rich. Yeah, but I'll know that I killed somebody. Mm-hmm. Jake, it's accidents happen.
Jeez,
at first, I'm like trying to make this work in my head. But afterwards, I literally got sick because I respected those two guys. One of them was a world champion, you know, and I was crushed by that somebody would even come up with that. I mean, I might have said it in a joke or something. But, you know, even when I dropped Steamboat, I told him this cannot be done on concrete. I'll kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And George...
Scott.
George Scott, who had given Steamboat a break, was up there, and he was needing some money to make money real quick because he was on his last legs. And he talked to Steamboat, and Steamboat comes and he says, Jake, I'll be okay on the concrete. I said, no, you won't, man. It's going to screw you up if I don't kill you. He goes, no, I can protect myself. I said, I'm not doing it, man. And he pleaded and pleaded and pleaded, and finally, okay, I'll do it, whatever. And I tried to protect him, and it damn near killed him.
Mm.
You know, his head swelled out 4 inches mm-hmm. from here to here.
Because you did it with such speed.
Yeah.
It was just, boom.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole secret behind the DDT is not hopping like people do today. Mm. But it's taking the left leg and swing it through.
Mm.
You step back with the left leg, and then you kick as hard as you can, and that gives you your speed, your pop. But there's some things you just can't play with, man. You know, I've never wanted – well, I take that back. I only hurt one person in this business, and it was on purpose. But he had it coming because I'd had neck surgery, and he's clotheslining the hell out of us. Dude, you got to lighten up. I'll take a great bump if you don't kill me. You know, don't tear my head off. Let me do my thing. And he told me that maybe I should get out of the business because I was getting old. And then the next time we wrestled, he had a bicep injury when he clotheslined me. Accidents do happen.
Right.
That was Psycho Sid.
Last few things, did you invent the DDT or did you see it somewhere?
Yeah.
It was an accident.
It was an absolute. I was wrestling Len Denton, who at the time was called the Grappler.
Len Denton, Portland.
Yeah, man, he's one of the greatest hands ever. You know, and never got a big break.
Perfect example of a great hand, regional.
Right? Absolutely.
There's always a few in every territory.
Yeah, he worked his ass off. He got me over. He taught me how to work, basically. You know, but we used to do a thing because at the time I was using a knee lift for a finish, which had been given to me by Wrestling 2. Was probably one of the nicest things ever done for me in this business because he had that knee left over, brother, in Louisiana or anywhere he went. But I used the knee lift, so we used to work a spot where I would front face lock Denton and work the whole back in the day, 20, 25, 30 minutes. And he'd fight his way to his feet and try to get out. No. Then finally he would cram me into the corner. And that would shake me up a little bit, but I'd twist it and fight him back out to the middle of the ring, and we'd go down. Then he'd come back up and cram me in there again. Well, the third time, finally, I let go. But as I let go, he backs up. He's bent over. I catch him with a knee left, a short one. He takes a bump. 1, 2, puts it near the ropes, on the rope. What a great spot.
Yeah.
You know, boom, right back to the front face lock.
Uh-huh.
That's the way to work. Mm-hmm. You know, take people for the ride, man. And one night we were in New Orleans, he went to push me into the corner and he stepped on my foot and we fell back, and the people went and I sprayed in my feet being a baby face.
Yeah.
And I didn't fall down. I'm embarrassed, you know. Yeah. God, no, I'm cool, you know. And Denton's down, and I look and I hear him say, cover me. I covered him. 1, 2, 3.
Was it?
The rest was it, man. So he claims he invented it. I claim that I.
You, like I said, just as we start to wind down, we started talking about Mexico.
Yeah.
And when you had this run in 93, 94, it kind of really did almost revitalize your career because you were, once again, the hottest heel in the business, working these shows that weren't even on TV.
No.
You know?
I was very fortunate to get the push. What push I got in TV from Vince. And then when I hit the independent scene, it was always sellout. And they called me from Mexico. I didn't call them, you know. And again, I'm very fortunate to have the snake thing. It's a one of a kind thing. And the DDT was a one of a kind thing back then. And people always ask me, does it bother you today that it's used for a high spot? I said, no, it just tells the people that goddamn Matt Jake must be a tough son of a bitch, because when he does it, you don't get up.
That's right. Yours is better. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that your success in Mexico led you getting back to Vince in 96?
Probably.
Yeah. You know, he was watching.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. If he could have blocked me, he would have done it.
Yeah.
If he could have took my name, he would have, but I owned that bitch.
Last question for today. It might be hard to say because you've had so many. Is there a match that you think of as like, okay, this was my favorite match out of all the ones I had?
Too many.
Yeah.
Too many, and for too many different reasons. Mm-hmm. One would be a Steamboat. Mm. Definitely one would be any match that I was in the ring with Andre. Mm. For me to even be in the ring with Andre, to me, was just, are you serious? Mm-hmm. And for him to sell for me, that, friend, is a compliment beyond, because he was such a huge, huge thing in this business, and he was a monster. And for him to pass out for the Snake, and he did such a great job of doing it. Something funny that night was whenever Bobby Heenan is over and trying to revive him, and he's hitting his chest. You know, I get close, I go, "Give him mouth to mouth, man. That'll bring him back." And he looks at me. You! I put my mouth on Andre's mouth. That's so nasty. But, you know, and then I think back to some of my Garvin matches. Garvin match might be at the top because...
Really? Is that from NWA time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We did a match at the Omni where, you know, he was doing that knockout punch thing. Well, I started blocking, and I'd laugh at him. Block, which pissed the people off to no end. In such easy spots, I'd block, and I'd laugh and turn to the people and laugh. And when I turn back around, I'd get one, right?
Yeah.
So easy. But did a thing where I just kept blocking. Well, then he started working my ribs.
Mm.
Well, I come to the Omni for the big match, and I'm hurt. Everybody knows I've got a cracked rib, you know, and... we taped it all up.
Mm.
And those assholes in the back did such a job taping it. And Ronnie grabbed the end of that tape, and instead of breaking and tearing, he just started unraveling and spinning me and shit, man. And working with Ronnie was such a pleasure. It was like driving a Mercedes after you've driven a Volkswagen.
Right.
You know, such a smooth ride. His shit was always solid. I've always believed in solid.
Mm.
You know, not hurting anybody, but you know it's there.
Right.
And I sell to the same stuff, but, you know, this isn't dancing.
Mm.
But.
That's right. Well, dude, it's a blast talking to you, and I already have three or four more ideas for future things we can do.
I love doing this because I love giving the fans what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're doing a phenomenal job with your show.
Thank you.
Doing that, or I wouldn't be in here, man.
Thank you.
We'll do more.
We'll do more.
I love you, bro.
Thank you, bro. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jake.